Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's the deadliest predator in human history. It's killed nearly half of all human beings who have ever lived, and it's roughly the size and weight of a grape seed, the mosquito. In human history, the mosquito has decided the fates of empires and nations. It's determined the trajectory of the world's economy. In short, it's steered and shaped our history time and time again. My guest this half hour is Tim Weingard. He's the author of the first book dedicated solely to the historical impact of the mosquito. The book's title, The Mosquito, A Human History of Our Deadliest Predator. Tim Weingard is a professor of history and political science at Colorado Mesa University in Grand Junction, Colorado. He's also a veteran of the Canadian Army. Tim, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Let's start off with why you wrote this book. Have mosquitoes' influence in our history been underappreciated?
I'll answer the first part of that is why I wrote the book. It was a kind of a series of things that happened. It wasn't like I had a dream or anything, and it came to me in a dream.
Yeah.
My teaching portfolio ranges from American history to Western civilization to indigenous studies, and my previous 4 books in some way deal with both military history and indigenous peoples globally. So I realized the impact that disease had during the Columbian Exchange and the transference of biology and ecosystems around the world in the centuries following Columbus, and the decimation that caused on you know, non-immune indigenous peoples in the Americas, in Australia and New Zealand and around the world. And I look at history as a bit of a puzzle, and there was just some puzzle pieces missing. So in my readings, I had come across mosquitoes and malaria and yellow fever, and then speaking with my dad after I had finished my last book, he's an emergency physician, and we were talking about malaria and the reemergence of dengue, which is another mosquito-borne disease. And then I had read an article in The Economist that was talking about CRISPR gene editing research in relation to mosquitoes. And then I went grocery shopping and saw a giant billboard for Deep Woods Off. And it kind of, all these puzzle pieces started to click together. And then I started with my preliminary research, and I just found that, and obviously there's been tons of literature prior dedicated to the mosquito in some way, shape, or form, and the puzzle pieces all started to click together, and I could start to see a very clear picture emerge.
Right, right. And to your thesis here, and the question I asked secondly, that mosquitoes, after reading your book, they have a tremendous impact, and one that historians don't focus on a lot, right?
There has been some other histories about the mosquito, but they're very, very small in time and space. So they're very localized to a specific area or to a specific time period. For example, there's a wonderful book by J.R. McNeil called Mosquito Empires, but it focuses solely on the Caribbean and southern United States, mm-hmm. In a very specific time period. Some of these dots together using a ton of sources from a vast array of academic fields.
Mm-hmm. Tim Weingard, let's focus on wars, which you do extensively in this book. You write here, it is worth remembering, as we navigate the trenches and tour historic theaters of war, that a sick soldier is more taxing to the military machine than a dead one. Not only do they need to be replaced, but they also continue to consume valuable resources. You talk about the fall of Rome, the Crusades, the American Revolution, the Civil War, Vietnam. We obviously don't have time to go through all of those, but pick one of those where you think the mosquito was particularly pivotal.
Well, I think for American listeners and an American audience, the American Revolution, certainly in the last year and a half, the last few years of the war, General Clinton is frustrated that General Washington won't commit to a decisive northern battle. So he shifts his grand strategy from fighting in the north to fighting in the south, and dumps the British army into the south. And the British troops that predominantly came from northern England and Scotland weren't acclimated to American malaria, or what they refer to as being seasoned to American malaria. So if you look at a map of Cornwallis in the south, he's zigzagging all over the place, and he's trying to escape, essentially, malaria. And his correspondence says this, and he's very frustrated. And he's told by General Clinton, his superior, to hole up in Yorktown. And he goes to Yorktown, and the Americans and French lay siege to Yorktown. And malarious mosquitoes cut Cornwallis' forces to pieces during the siege of Yorktown. And in his correspondence, he very clearly says that he has roughly 35 to 37% of his troops left standing, and the remainder are either dead, dying, or sick and laid up from malaria and unable to fight. So in a way, the Anopheles mosquito is the founding mother of the United States by really crippling the British forces during the Southern Campaign and certainly during the Siege of Yorktown.
Wow. Let's move on to the American Civil War. Did it decide the outcome there in any way?
Well, it actually has a two-pronged role in the American Civil War. The first is obviously when the war starts, President Lincoln says very clearly that his war aim is to preserve the Union, and that included the economic integrity of the Union. So in the first 2 years of the war, the mosquito essentially has her way with Union forces, and we can see that especially in 1862 in the Western campaign along the Mississippi River and in the attempts to take Vicksburg, the Union forces are cut to pieces by malaria. And then we also see it in General McClellan's Peninsula campaign to try to take Richmond. And the primary sources just talk about McClellan's forces being very bogged down and suffering from malaria. So the mosquito prolongs the war in a way by helping prolong the war by crushing Union forces during 1862 predominantly. And obviously as the war progresses, Lincoln adds another primary war aim to the Civil War, which was the abolition of slavery and the Emancipation Proclamation. So had the war been short, that might not have happened. And then in the final 2 years of the war, the Confederacy with the Anaconda Plan, or the blockade of the Confederacy, is absolutely in severe shortage of the anti-malarial quinine, where the Union is stockpiled with quinine. So during the final years of the war, we see malaria start to rot the Confederate forces, where the Union forces with their stockpiles of quinine are more protected, and thereby giving the Union an advantage from a malarial standpoint. Mm. And ultimately a Union victory, and with the 13th Amendment, slavery, thankfully, is banned in the United States.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, Tim Weingart is my guest, professor of history and political science at Colorado Mesa University in Grand Junction, Colorado. A new book out, The Mosquito, A Human History of Our Deadliest Predator. And to remind, this fact alone just jumps out, Tim. The mosquito has killed nearly half of all human beings who have ever lived. So it is our deadliest predator. Let's go back earlier in the settlement of North America, where you write about how when European settlers came to North America, they brought with them new strains of disease carried by mosquitoes. There, it was for the indigenous population of North America a devastation.
Yes, so with the arrival of the first Europeans, Columbus, and then successive waves of Europeans, they have malaria in their blood. And what's an interesting fact is that Old World Anopheles mosquitoes and New World Anopheles mosquitoes, which are the certain species of the Anopheles, are the transmitters of malaria, they followed a distinct evolutionary path for 90 to 95 million years. So there was these Anopheles mosquitoes in the Americas did not have malaria or spread malaria. So when the arrival of European settlers and African slaves with malaria in their blood, the Anopheles mosquitoes of all the Americas very immediately start vectoring malaria, which is amazing when you think about the distinct evolutionary path that these mosquitoes had followed. And then later on, once the African slave trade unfortunately kicks into high gear, we see Africans coming over with yellow fever and also introducing Aedes mosquitoes, which carry yellow fever and a host of other mosquito-borne viruses to the Americas.
When we say that the mosquito has killed nearly half of all human beings who have ever lived, how do you come up with a number? Can you come up with a number of people that mosquitoes have, or I guess it's an estimate, right? Stretching back how far?
So I'll answer the first. They're all estimates, obviously, because we don't know for sure. We use, the researchers use in statistical extrapolation. But generally, the estimate is there's been 108 billion human beings, Homo sapiens, who have ever lived across our existence. And I kept coming across numerous, academic journals and papers that have, using statistical extrapolation, that this half of all human beings have been killed by the mosquito or the diseases she transmits. So there was another article I read with statistical extrapolation, and the numbers came back, 50 billion, 52 billion, 54 billion. And again, these are estimates based on a wide variety of factors, our ancestral evolution in Africa, and the slowness of human migration coming out of Africa, the fact that malaria has been with us, and it is the scourge of humankind, mm-hmm. that malaria has been with us across our existence and predominantly kills children under 5 years old. So there's a lot of factors when, this statistical extrapolation that these researchers did that goes into that number. And obviously, that number is an estimate, just as the death rates currently from mosquito-borne disease are estimates. And they cover a wide, wide range. There's no clear consensus on how many people are still currently contracting mosquito-borne diseases or dying of mosquito-borne diseases. It's certainly a wide range of estimates, depending on the statistics that you can find in the various research and publications.
Mm-hmm. Tim Weingart is a historian, also a professor of political science at Colorado Mesa University. His book, The Mosquito, A Human History of Our Deadliest Predator. So when you research this book, what is the earliest point, Tim, at which we can see historical evidence of the mosquito shaping life on Earth?
There's theories. Certainly there's been studies and theories that the mosquito and other insects, not just the mosquito, but sandflies and ticks, that they were infecting dinosaurs with various viruses and parasites and worms, and helped was already in slow decline, or dinosaur species were either extinct or endangered from mosquito-borne disease prior to the meteor hitting 65 million years ago near the Yucatan Peninsula. So it doesn't discount, nobody's discounting the meteor theory, which is, there's ample evidence for. But what they're theorizing is that dinosaurs were already thinning out because of vector-borne diseases from insects.
Mm-hmm. Why are mosquitoes so difficult to control and eradicate throughout history? This has been our struggle as humans, right?
Yes, they've followed the mosquito, and the diseases have followed our evolutionary journey in and out of Africa as a creature and species on this planet. And I think they're highly adaptable. Just like any other creature, they underwent the process of natural selection, and they want to survive just as much as any other species on the planet does. So, and they're remarkably adaptable. So I think it's all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at DDT, for example, DDT, obviously it had other side effects to the environment and species, and including human beings, that were very negative. But if we look at DDT just as a mosquito killer, it was a wonder chemical. Its ability to eradicate mosquitoes and thereby reduce mosquito-borne disease by huge numbers. But even before Rachel Carson publishes her seminal work, Silent Spring, in 1962, there was mosquito resistance to DDT across the planet. So prior to that, we're already seeing the mosquito adapt to become essentially immune to DDT. And it's quite amazing how adaptable not only the mosquito is, but also the malaria parasite as well, which is a very sophisticated creature, a parasite, in its own evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm. In just a moment, before we wind up this conversation, I wanted to get your thoughts on the future of the mosquito, perhaps its end. But first of all, this spin out this story, because you have a personal connection in your family. Your great grandfather is it, William Weingard. Tell us briefly the story of how his life intersected with that of the mosquito.
Yeah, this is a story he told me personally, and he passed away at 87 when I was 10 years old, and I used to talk to him for hours about his experiences in both the First and Second World War. So he comes from a very, very small town in Canada, and he joined the Canadian Army in 1915 at the age of 15 to fight in the First World War, and he was wounded and gassed in the trenches in March 1916. Returned to Canada because he was still underage, and they found that out. So at 16, instead, he got back to Canada and immediately joined the Canadian Navy at 16, and then spent the rest of the war on a ship on the off the coast of West Central Africa, which is the ancestral birthplace of, you know, mosquito-borne disease. And he contracted malaria, influenza, and typhoid in 1918 at the end of the war, with the influenza epidemic, obviously, all at the same time. And he was roughly 5'10", 175, 80 pounds. He was quite a big kid, and he weighed 97 pounds, and they were ready to chuck him overboard. And someone saw him blink, and he spent a year in Sierra Leone in hospital, and then another year in London, England, in the hospital. And his repatriation back to Canada at the end of the war was obviously delayed by almost 2 years. So in 1920, he was finally healthy enough to head back home to Canada. And he, being a sailor, he was accustomed to ships and a sailing life. And he saw a teenage girl getting seasick over the railing and tossed a few flirting, snide remarks her way. And as my great-grandmother Hilda told me, she turned around and gave him a tongue-lashing. And the quarreling lovers were happily married for 67 years.
Wow. That is amazing. Also, when he was emaciated to like half his weight and they were going to throw him overboard because they thought he was dead, just that blink that was seen by someone is the reason that your family is around. That's amazing.
It is amazing, and they couldn't, I guess, they couldn't find, well, he was unconscious, but I guess they couldn't find a pulse, and he obviously looked like a skeleton, and someone saw a tiny blink and said he's not dead, and yes, well, that is the sole reason I am here.
Let's wind up with looking toward the future, even though you're a historian. You do touch on this in your book. CRISPR, this gene editing technology of recent years, offers hope here for our battle with our deadliest predator, the mosquito. Tell us about it.
Well, CRISPR, the new CRISPR gene editing technology, is just fascinating, and it's amazing. So essentially, they can cut out a piece of DNA from a genome and replace it with a desired one. So the idea is to CRISPR mosquitoes to make them harmless by making them incapable of vectoring the diseases. So you take down the disease without actually killing the mosquito species itself. And that's a remarkable potential that we have in our war against mosquitoes. And they're using bacteria as well to try to do the same thing, injecting mosquitoes with a certain bacteria. So I think the CRISPR technology is an amazing, it's simply a mind-boggling technology that can be used definitely for positive benefit to humanity, keeping in mind that we can also CRISPR any animal, including human beings, so there could potentially be a darker side to CRISPR. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we hope the international community and national governments put in some moral, legal guidelines as to the use of CRISPR on any animal, whether that be the mosquito or human beings, but right. It certainly is a new hope that we can maybe manipulate the mosquito with gene editing to obviously keep the mosquito itself, but to eliminate these mosquito Borne diseases and the diseases that the mosquito vectors.
Mm-hmm. Right. Keep the mosquito itself. Are mosquitoes good for anything? Please, I need some convincing there.
We don't know. And again, there's an equilibrium to Mother Nature, or in Star Wars vernacular, there's a balance to the force. And if we start intruding on natural selection and intruding on global ecologies, we don't know what the outcome would be.
Yes.
So generally speaking, does the mosquito ingest waste like other insects? No. Does she aerate the soil like other insects, or they? No. But since only females mosquitoes bite, the male's world essentially revolves around nectar and sex. So mosquitoes do help pollinate certain, not to the extent of bees, but mosquitoes do pollinate certain plants and flowers. And some flowers are, reliant on the mosquito, male mosquitoes, for that. So I think, I'm not promoting the extermination of mosquitoes. And I think, are they an indispensable food source for any other animal? We don't think so. But again, we don't know.
We'd have to interview some bats, probably, to find that out.
Yeah, exactly. Tampering with, as we've seen, with our current global issues, tampering with Mother Nature can be a dangerous game.
Mm-hmm. Tim, before I say goodbye, and very quickly, in a few seconds, I'm thinking this is unfathomable to ask the question, what would our history have been like without the mosquito? There's just too many factors here, aren't there?
Yeah, I would say so. And obviously, no historical event is built on a sole foundation. There's lots of cascading cause and effect relationships that go into any historical event, and certainly the mosquito is part of those cause and effect relationships. But I call that what if history.
Yep.
And we obviously don't know, but I can probably safely guess that the world would look very different if not for this remarkable animal.
Okay, very good. Tim Weingart, thank you very much for this conversation. Tim's new book, The Mosquito, A Human History of Our Deadliest Predator. Tim, thanks for joining us this half hour.
Thank you very much.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.